you are all welcome. And earlier on, I invited everybody for tea. I'm sure we all had tea. Wasting time, and our agenda actually for today is to further deliberate on the private members bill, and we will also be getting presentations from our two provinces, which is the Free State and the Eastern Cape. But before we start with the provinces, we are going to start with the private members bill. And we will actually get maybe briefing from the different parties as to what the positions are with regard to the private members bill. We had the time to discuss the matter in our different study groups, and I'm sure we have a position with regard to this matter. I'm not sure if we have somebody who has the eye for us regarding the private members bill that is before us, because today we are going to deal with a motion of desirability. So it is important that we get a break from the different parties that are here today. Honorable, in fact, we were supposed to, yesterday we agreed that the IEC was going to brief the portfolio committee, but I feel the IEC is an observer, and their status will remain as observers. They will make their presentation at the right time when they come before the committee to come and brief the committee on their electoral amendment bill. But for today, with regard to the private members bill, they are observers. They will be observing the proceedings of the meeting today. Is there maybe anybody wants to come in at this stage with regard to maybe making an input towards the private members bill? The bill deals with quite a number of issues, structural changes, and the whole issue of constituency-based election, the whole issue of demarcations, and all of that. I'm sure members have discussed with the study group. I noticed the hands of the Honorable Defrater.
The private members bill, many of the issues kind of overlap with the other bill that I see on the table for it. And I make the following suggestion: that we kind of flip the issues, if you like. There are many issues that overlap, as I said, and perhaps when we look at the IEC's amendments, that we kind of look at where the impact here, and can issues be dealt with at the same time, maybe in April. There are other issues, for example, constituencies and so forth. That's a longer-term, more complicated discussion. I don't lay my cards on the table, to be honest with you, because this is a colleague of mine, also in my heart here, the table is still. I don't think realistically these kind of things would ever happen in the next election. So, you know, that's the reality. And if that is agreement on that, then I would like to suggest that perhaps that become a longer-term debate, perhaps where we start initially discussing these issues as kind of a foundation. And it'll probably overlap into the next new parliament, possibly. I don't know how the rules work, but certainly I'd like to see any issues that impact on the goals that the IEC in Australia are going to be giving us. If those issues get addressed concerning this bill, then getting that one. So it's kind of deal with two processes at the same time. And then possibly looking at the other issues kind of in the long term, it might not be realistic to look at the issues even further in this chain, because it's probably going to happen to a new term where this bill or actually this bill might have to be retabled in new parliaments. So that's my suggestion.
So does the brief from Honourable Defectors with regard to the splitting of the bill, because there are issues that the IEC is dealing with at present, and there are those issues that are long term, I mean that we could maybe flag up until the next parliament. But I thought even if the bill has similarities with regard to what the IEC is doing, if the time comes for submission, I'm sure the opposition can always come and make a submission. Everybody will be allowed to make a submission with regard to the bill that the IEC will be presenting. I'm not sure. Can I get what other members are? The opinions from other members. Honourable Bosman.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for being late. I've just contacted.
You got another mic?
No.
All what we are saying is to say we were not supposed to deal with this. we take the holistic thing out at this particular moment in terms of ensuring that we deal with each and every item like we have initially indicated before. And I still feel there are certain engagements that we have to do outside this particular meeting in terms of ensuring that we do the right thing for the bill, and also not only the bill but the nation at large, so that as we open up for whatever thing that we all agree to do with whatever things that we have to do, we have dealt with those particular issues before we take it to the public. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I would like to also concur with the Chairperson that the IEC can't keep us now.
they should observe. Then at the right time, we can give IEC a chance, then as a committee we can be able to deliberate. I think we could shelve everything for now.
Okay, no. The issue now, the issue we're dealing with now is the splitting of the issue from the private members, like Honorable Postman is saying that are we saying we wait for the IEC to make their presentation of the bill, and maybe the private member who made the submission will come and make a presentation, or we deal with the issues of the private member, or in fact we integrate part of that and deal with while we deal with the IEC presentation. Honorable Gang.
I think we have our parliamentary legal advisor as well. I would just like to know, we have a bill before us. There is a procedure that's been prescribed in that regard. And in my view, I might be wrong, and that's why I'm asking the question, but in my view, we have to deal with this bill in terms of the procedures indicated in the relevant rule. So we have to pass a motion, we have to pass or not pass a motion of desirability. And therefore, obviously, we might want to split things, all kinds of things, but I don't really think it's possible in terms of what we are dealing with now. That does not preclude these matters, once again, being canvassed when we deal with the other bill, for example, the IEC bill. It also does not preclude us from dealing with the same matters in the future, maybe in the next parliament, whatever the case may be. But at this point, that's my first point that I want to make, and I want the legal advisor to advise us on that, is that we have a bill before us and we have to decide whether to pass a motion of desirability, yes or no. Second issue is I want to know what is the status at this point in time, Chair, of the IEC, the so-called IEC bill. Where are we as far as that is concerned? Has it been I have a letter before, for example, that indicates very clearly at least, and I want to put that before this committee, that this bill has been submitted to the Speaker by the Minister of Home Affairs, Minister Pardo, and I want to table this now so that it is part of the record. And there's just an indication for us in terms of what the status is of the particular bill. Those are two questions that I want you to, with your permission, that we put straight away to the legal advisor.
Advocate, I'm sure, to help us see whether this will, what do we actually do?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. First of all, if I can maybe start with the easier question in respect of the status of the IEC bill. I have confirmed with the bill's office a few minutes ago that in fact the bill, the electoral amendment bill to be introduced by the minister has been submitted in respect of the JR, the Joint Rule 159, so that has been complied. That's the first step. At the moment, the bill's office is simply confirming whether the bill has been gazetted, and then the bill's office planned at this point in time to have the bill introduced on Friday 26th. July. So that bill is very imminent. In respect to the procedural aspect, the committee is to some extent in a bit of a bind in respect of all the work that it has to do. There is no deadline placed on any committee to deal with a bill in terms of the rules. And the same goes for the interim measures on the consideration of private members' bills. There is no specific time that's set out for a committee to deal with it. However, the rule does require the committee to consider the bill and then to consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill. So given that the Speaker has given an instruction that committees must finalise bills, I'm not so sure, and that's maybe more a procedural question, whether the committee can afford to have the bill just lie around. However, like I'm saying, it's not a rule requirement, but there are certain instructions that the committee currently has to consider that does come from the speaker. In respect of splitting the bill clearly deals with two issues. The one issue is currently being almost duplicated, perhaps not in the same manner, but the subject matter is definitely duplicated in the bill that it will be introduced on Friday, or it is planned to be introduced on Friday. Now, before the Abyssinia judgment, when the committee on member legislative proposals look at proposals, one of the criteria that they looked at was whether it was an executive bill introduced or on way to be introduced. And the reason for that is simply that your department that is introduced, or the minister rather, that is introduced through his or her department, has more resources to actually find how the bill will be implemented, etc. So the bill is usually usually better research, and implementation has already been considered by the minister. So and on that criteria, the bill would have been, or rather the mission to introduce would not have been granted. And that criteria is a valid criteria. In the Ambrosini judgment, the court did not say that the criteria used by Parliament was incorrect. The court simply said that it was the fact that there was a hurdle in the way before introduction that was incorrect. So not stop this committee from using that criteria. And then, of course, the member is not prohibited from even submitting the relevant sections drafted in this private member's proposal as part of the submissions to be considered by the committee as alternative drafts for clauses in that bill. The other aspect is the constituency aspect, and that is a policy decision. From our legal point of view, when we looked at the bill, we could not find anything that made it in itself unconstitutional. In fact, the Constitutional Court itself said there are many methods to comply with the constitutional requirement for elections. So any type of bill is not unconstitutional, and there's no legal aspect that I don't assist the committee with, but it is in fact a policy discussion. I'm not sure whether it's really need for further research necessarily to be done at this point in time. We must remember that when this Parliament rises, the bill will lapse if it has not been decided on. So in that instance, and I think that's more procedural than legal, there might be an obligation on this committee to not delay with this bill.
That was the explanation by advocate Sandal Mebe, and I'm sure it's clear to all of us that we can continue with the motion of desirability. We can decide whether we are going to wait for the minister's bill and have a motion on the private member's bill. And if the member who's made the bill, Mr. Selby, Honorable Selby, wants to make an input when dealing with the IEC amendment bill, he has all the right to come and make a submission. So it's up to the members as to how do we deal with the matter. Can I get the indication as the way forward with regard to this matter? Honorable Andre.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. I think it is clear that we have a ground before us that we need to deal with. And as I see, we would prefer to deal with this matter neatly and deal with it now and to deal with the notion of desirability. As a session of these matters can be dealt with later again, I think we want to thank the member, Honorable Self, for introducing this bill and for allowing us to have had this very interesting debate on as far as these matters are concerned, which are clearly matters that we need to consider on a continuous basis. It is not something that one can just say has been dealt with and that we will keep to our current system forever long. It is something we need to deal with continuously. But I think that as the ANC is concerned, there are two aspects to this bill, as indicated yesterday as well and indicated before. The one as such. And the second part of it deals with aspects of absent and special counters. So let me deal with the second part first. As indicated earlier, the Independent Electoral Commission, electoral amendment by 2030, has been submitted to the Speaker in terms of Joint Rule 159, and this is also being alluded to now by the lead advisor, that what the status is clear at this policy minute. As well as being properly researched by the IEC, and against the former letters, as far as the second part of the bill before us is concerned, and we would prefer the ANC dealing with these matters, also these matters that have been put before us in terms of the bill that we are dealing with now, to deal with these matters when we deal with what I would like to refer to as the IEC bill that is, has been properly researched, that is en route to this particular committee. And the proposals of Honourable Self, as well as of other opposition parties with regard to these matters, could indeed be dealt with at that time when we deal with the so-called IEC bill. So we would prefer to deal with these matters then, and to also then at that point get the full benefit of the IEC's views on all these kinds of matters. With regard to the first part of the bill that proposes an amendment to the electoral system, our position at present is that the Constitution, the most important problem we have with the bill as it stands, is that the Constitution deals with the matter of multi-party democracy and guarantees that particular principle. I'm not saying that this bill is unconstitutional in any way, but the idea, the sort of political principle underlying all of this is the whole idea of having a multi-party democracy. And it does appear that if we would accept these amendments to the electoral system, that that then we would it would be to the detriment of smaller political parties, and would most probably result in a 2- or 3-party system. I'm also saying this because of the fact that the 300 seats allocated then to constituencies, and we will get constituents in these, in those cases, the proposal is actually that there are 3 MPs per constituency, which means that at best, this could be held in a sort of a 3-party system, with a few parties maybe getting a few more seats in terms of the 100 seats. The cut of the proportional seats, the 100 seats that is being included. So the next result of the vote, in our view, would be an increased threshold by stealth.
The mic is off on the
I'm sorry. Would be an increased. It would be an increased threshold by stealth. At present, there is a bit of a threshold rating, but this would result in an increased threshold, resulting in a system that is, in a sense, then less proportionate to the votes each party received than what is currently the case. The introduction of a constituency proportional list system will result in a more complex system as well. And we want to keep our electoral system as simple as possible, that all our people, you know, understand it, and that there's no matters that are so complex that it becomes not clear what you're actually voting for. Whilst aimed at greater accountability, whilst the bill is aimed at greater accountability and achieving that, it is questionable. Yes.
Don't you think it's better if you use another mic because there's some cross-mic
machines that there are.
I don't know what's wrong with the system today. I think use the other system.
So whilst the bill is clearly aimed at greater achieving greater accountability, a principle that we support and do not reject at all, it is questionable to what extent the proportional list system at constituency level will achieve this. The voter will still vote for a political party, not for a candidate, according to the proposals before us. Each party will have a list of more than one candidate, and this may confuse voters as far as who they are actually voting for. I think that, and it's important also to note that on the admission of the member who introduced the bill, Honourable Self, on his own admission, this bill is to an extent then also a trade-off. There are, will be gains in terms of this bill, in terms of accountability, but there will also be sacrifices in terms of, for example, the position of the small parties and their representativity in the House, in the National Assembly. So on this basis, Chair, it is our submission that it is not desirable to continue with this particular bill at this stage.
Thank you, Honourable Khan. May I get input from other parties? Honourable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, first, my apologies. I'm also doing another portfolio committee in trade industry simultaneously.
Honourable McIntosh, can you use another mic or?
Okay.
Because I don't know how
to use this mic. Is that better? Is that one better or should I come and talk on your right
hand? Yes.
Somebody's telephone. I won't. Do you want to record? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Daniel, I won't squeeze your hand under the table. No, Madam Chair, I listened very carefully to what Mr. Gum said, and being an attorney by background, he was very careful and did what I would describe as close to an egadant, as one could imagine. But I understand Mr. Gum's point, but I personally think that this party member's motion has more merit than he's prepared to concede to it. But I also think, Madam Chair, it is still theoretical at this stage, and I think the IEC should spend more time on it. But there are a whole lot of things about getting more accountability. As I said, for example, people who are going to come into these constituencies, they should be resident in those constituencies. Otherwise, you'll just get people who live in Port Elizabeth standing in the Mutata constituency. And I don't think that would be constructive if we really want accountability. So I think we've got the message that the ANC is keen for touch on this bill, although they do concede that it has got some merit. I also do agree that it's quite a complex change, and people actually get used to different voting systems. I don't know how many of us who are in this room were at that electronic voting seminar that was held at the ICC, which was very well done. But one heard there, for example, in Northern Ireland, they have a multiple voting system, and the people seem to accept and understand it, and they get to like it. And I think that's a good point. Our people have got used to a very simple system. It's identical to the Dutch. In the Netherlands, they also have this direct proportional representation system. But I think we've got a good system. I think it could be better to put in accountability, and I don't necessarily agree with all of Mr. Gahn's arguments or reasons, but I also accept that we should possibly just hold this bill, treat it seriously, but recognize that it must go through a longer and more considered process, particularly with the IEC.
Honourable You're okay.
I didn't have my head up, Jay.
Okay. Okay. No, I know you didn't, but that's what the parties are making their input.
Jay, what I do say is I think as long as the aspects are that come here that overlap the IEC people, you'll kind of look at these aspects as well. I don't know if it's the right time or the right place right now to ask. I'm presuming that the IEC bill, I know we're talking about this bill, we want, or ideally we want all that sort of ratified and granted parliament for the next election. If that's the case, then we're quite tight for time. So that's the only other concern I have. And I think, realistically, probably, I think this is much of what Honourable Brown was saying. But I do agree that from a time perspective, from the October, I think, consistency aspect of issue, it wouldn't be realistic to look at it in this parliament because it's just to be run out of time. That's just the reality.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I know that for now we cannot actually look at the bill because of the time. But we must decide on the private members' bill whether to continue with it or what is our position with regard to that today or now. So that they were able to deal with the IEC bill after this. And like advocate said that when the IEC is, I mean the IEC bill is before the committee, then the member can always come and make his or her presentation with regard to the aspects of his of the bill that he introduced. So on that note, I'm not sure if we are dealing with the motion of desirability now, because we have been discussing this for some time, and I think we are now should decide whether do we continue with the bill as is and wait for the IEC bill to deal with, and the members will, the member will make a submission with regard to the IEC bill of issues that they want to raise. But for now, we are dealing with the private member's bill, and I need a way forward. Honourable Andre?
Yes, I just want to procedurally hear from the legal advisor, please. So one of us has to introduce this motion. Should I not, for example, introduce a motion that is not desirable or what? Because I'm not sure whether we have a motion before us, no one has introduced a motion. If it's fine, then I will introduce a motion that it's not desirable, or otherwise someone must introduce a motion that it's desirable and we must vote on that. Because, you know, what is this motion of desirability? Do we have to, can I introduce a motion of undesirability or otherwise?
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, listening to members at the moment, it's message. You know, members are saying currently we should not be proceeding with the bill, especially on the aspect of the constitution. So there is a draft motion of desirability that was prepared. So I can circulate that, and then if maybe members want to add on to it, we can add. But if members do not want to add on to it, then we can adopt the report. And then that is the report that will go to the bill.
Do we have to indicate our reasons there? The record will reflect on the reasons. You know, we just pass a motion that is desirable, one that is undesirable.
In terms of the interim rule, the notion of desirability on the bill is rejected. The committee must immediately table its report on the bill. So that's what we did. And then there are reasons that they're given on the draft report. So, but if there are other reasons that we want to add, I think we can add why we are not proceeding with the bill at the moment.
But I'm not confident, Jay. Who introduces this thing now? One of the members of this? has to introduce that motion. It's not automatically before the committee number one. Secondly, I want to address you just on another aspect that I want to be in the report that goes to Parliament, but I can address you on that later. Let's just deal with this matter now. Who introduces this motion? Can I introduce it? Can you give it to me and then I introduce it and before the committee properly?
Yeah.
Can I see it?
I thought there is the same procedure we follow every time. The secretary introducing it, but I don't know what is happening today. I don't know, we are changing.
Sorry, Chair.
Can you circulate
to
other members
of the board? I'm not concerned the report that we're supposed to read to you, heard you circulate it now. Sure, this report should have been tabled before so we could have studied it properly.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily against it, I'm just concerned that it's been handed out now.
To the interim measures for introduction consideration of private members' bills, the relevant rule that we're looking at is I, which reads a committee to which a private members' bill has been referred must, and then sub-rule 2, after due deliberation, consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill. So the rule is actually not clear on who must introduce the motion. It simply says the committee must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill. And I would take that, for me, which is simply make logical sense, that a member of the committee will then introduce the motion and the committee will vote on that motion. So it's a bit of technicality whether it should be a motion of undesirability or whether a motion of desirability should simply be raised and then voted on as for or against. That I must be honest, I'm not sure about, but I think that's simply a technical argument. Whether it's a desirability or not desirability motion that is in fact introduced.
So in that case, Chair, I recommend the following. Either one of these members who are in favour of this bill introduce a motion of desirability and then we vote on the matter, and obviously those who don't think it's desirable vote it down. Or otherwise, if there is no one who will introduce that, then I will introduce a motion of undesirability. So maybe you can allow someone who wants to introduce that. If there's no one, I'll introduce it on the other way.
I'm sure we are all understanding only what the Honorable Khan is saying, that we need to have a member who is going to introduce a motion of desirability, those who are in favor of the bill. And those, if he is to introduce that, then it's going to be an emotion of undesirability. I'm not a legal guru. You know, it's good to have people with legal skills, because I was completely lost, but now I understand what the argument of the Honorable Gump is. Honorable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, I'm not a lawyer, I'm a simple farmer. What I wish to suggest is, why don't we just adopt the report? Can you hear me? Sorry. Why don't we just adopt the report which has just been tabled by our secretary?
Mm.
And that deals with the whole thing.
Okay.
Honorable Defector, Honorable Gump.
I want to suggest you, the Chair, a different matter. The current report clearly has been stage managed. Now, an outcome of a debate which isn't even concrete yet has been discovered on this report. The principle dropped. So I don't agree with you about this report, even if we agree with 100%. The principle is dropped. Remember, this report should be written by the committee. So some bureaucrat has written it and has decided what our decision is to be. We haven't even voted on the thing. And already decisions have been made on the written document. We should scrap this report, it should be rewritten from scratch, based on the clear decision, whatever the decision is today. I don't know how it works, but this is very clear that the report was a decision, I mean, the decision theory. We need the debate for the issue. Mm-hmm. This is wrong, Chair, and you are not aware of this, then you've lost control of managing the committee.
Mm-hmm. Honourable
Now for that last comment that was made by Honourable Defraser. But as far as the rest is concerned, I think we actually agree the first time we've seen this. It is not the committee's report. The committee's report is based on the deliberations today. So Honourable Defraser is absolutely correct in that regard. And therefore we need, that's why I say, we need a report, yes, but we need a report that will come before the committee, for example, tomorrow, following the deliberations here. In terms of the rule dealing with private members of legislative proposals, it's quite clear that we have to deal with emotional undesirability. So we can't now, decide to substitute that with a different approach. It is in the rule, and the rule is quite clear on that. So I once again suggest the same, that is that unless there's a member, it seems like there is not, can you just get an indication for us if there is not a member that is really willing to put forward a motion of desirability now?
Mm-hmm.
Because following that, we can then decide what we will do, and I will then propose a suggestion.
Honourable Bosman?
Yes, sir.
Sure,
I thank you very much for that. I think we raised this issue of reports that have been circulated during the meeting, and I think that has since improved. But you are saying the report that has been tabled before us in principle agrees with what we have been discussing. So what we are going to do, I think what we should do is to adopt it with the right to say those are issues that were deliberated here should then be included, if we feel there's something that is being left out into that particular report. That's one. Secondly, is that there has been a mention that there should be a motion, and of which I think we need to finalize that, because in actual fact, even though we don't, you know, technically you need a motion, but actually, in reality, we have already dealt with that in terms of showcasing our position at the portfolio committee. So I'm saying that should just be professionalized, but in actuality we have done that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The report before us was drafted by the Secretary. I was not there in the first meeting, I just came in yesterday, so issues that we dealt with last time, I am not familiar with. But it is true that we are supposed to cover issues that are discussed in the committee. And I agree with Honorable Gum that the issues that he raised need to be covered. The issues that are raised by other members need to be covered in the report before we present the report. But what we are supposed to deal with now is the question of the motion. We are to deal with the motion of desirability or undesirability. Is there a member who is going to introduce a motion of desirability? Or if we don't have, then we must have a member who is going to introduce a motion of undesirability. Honorable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I think the matter will be resolved and we can move forward for the IEC's sake. I wish to move a motion of desirability in terms of the private members.
You mentioned something like IEC. I don't understand what you mean when you say the IEC, because you are now referring to private members' bill.
Madam Chair, I understand it, and maybe I'm misinformed. We need to be able to move on to the bill which the IEC has presented to us, so that we can move that bill forward. What's happening now is the private member bill is effectively delaying that process. So if I put forward a motion of desirability for the private member bill, then it means that I think the majority on this committee would vote it down, but then at least we can go on and get forward with the next bill. And then it comes back. And the private members can come back to this committee in the next bill.
Honourable McIntosh, please don't confuse us. We are here dealing with a private member's bill. We don't have the IEC bill in front of us here. We are talking about the private member's bill. Can we do that, please? A motion of desirability for a private member's bill, for honorable selfish bill, if I may be clear.
No.
Please don't confuse us further.
I propose the desirability of the honorable selfish bill.
That is the proposal for a motion of desirability, honorable Gump.
She doesn't need a second
law. Yes, it needs a second. Could we have a second for Honorable McIntosh? We do not have a second for Honorable McIntosh. Okay, now is the time for Honorable Gump to introduce a motion of undesirability.
I so move, Chair, for a motion of undesirability based on the argument that has been advanced earlier, which I'm not going to repeat now, but which is part of the reason.
Second up for this, Honorable Peterson Maduna.
I second it.
Okay, the motion of undesirability by Honorable Gump has been seconded by Honorable Peterson Maduna. Thank you, Honorable Member. Other proceedings will be done by the Secretary with regard to the report to be presented before Parliament. I'm sure that will be brought before the committee tomorrow morning.
Madam Chair, you're not asking anybody who abstains from the undesirability
That will have to be done. Whether there are any objections, whatever, that we see whether we can have a vote.
Any objections on what? On motion of desirability or of undesirability? Of undesirability. Okay. Honorable McIntosh, okay. Abstention? No abstention. Thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Fraser?
Well, you mentioned the IEC bill. That's only coming to, I believe, come to the 15 and 26. So, okay, I'll answer that.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Advocate. Thank you so much for coming in. Honourable Members, we are proceeding with our meeting. And we now have the provinces. Let's have 5 minutes more for break.
Hey, madam, I have a problem. I can see my back. I can see my house.
Thank you, sir. My name is Bonagela Maikito, provincial member of the I'm with Muhudi, Tuhani, who is the financial director in the province. I wish to say good morning to all members of the portfolio committee. Chair, my presentation is going to be based on four issues, four very important issues. One is the administrative part of it in terms of our footprint and in terms of our stakeholder forums in the province. And the second part will deal with performance of the province in terms of civic services, basing it strongly on our business plan, which deals with birth registration, late registration of birth, identity documents, school projects, and so on. The third part will be dealing with immigration issues, where we deal with type of entries, inspectorate, and permit inspection. And the last part will deal really with the issues related to support services, which will be your staff issues and filings and so on. Chair, the province is right in the center of the country. We account for about 6% of the population, which is 2.7, the population 2.8. We work from four district municipalities and one metro, and our offices are spread accordingly. And each district, there should be a district manager operations that would be running a district. And then the provincial manager in the province would be managing the whole province. We've launched all the stakeholder forums. Each district, there's a stakeholder forum with a chairperson. Most of the chairpersons are in the district that are really dealing with making sure that as a department, we render services to the public on the ground. In other words, the CDWs and in the Free State, who are dealing with people on the ground from wards, are able to tell us that there's a problem here, people don't have documents here, and we work with the stakeholders to be able to serve the people. We also have stakeholders like the education, Department of Education, and SASA, social development, that we work together to go out and assist people. Can you go on? I thought I should just give this strategic overview, the vision and the vision statement, the mission, the values statement, which is very important for our people to understand that. And in terms of the values, we should be people-centered and caring and patriotic as department. I think that was important as well. The outcomes of the minister, all the strategic objectives that we have there are related to the outcomes. That the minister signed an agreement with the president, so we want to make sure that we reach that. Yeah, can you go on? the structure is we have this four district municipalities, one metro and local municipalities are about 20. Our offices in each of the districts, we have an office and a DMO. But Harit is vacant, there's no DMO yet. In Mangaung, the metro, there's a DMO who's really taking care of both Harit and Mangaung. Then there's a DMO in Mijuliputa who's taking care of Tawamuputa Nyani, Mijuliputa, and Pindamidari. Tawamuputa Nyani is vacant, yes. We've just advertised now, very soon we'll be appointing somebody. Can you go? This is the footprint in the province. The footprint is that we should be all over where people are so that we are able to render services. If you look at Harit, the district itself, there we have about three offices. And in these three offices, we have 17 towns. Where we only have we are in two of those towns, of the 17 towns. And the others we serve with the mobile trucks, meaning that we go out there with mobile trucks. Then we have Mangaung. We have three offices in Mangaung. Exclusive of the hospitals, we have a number of hospitals in Mangaung that are connected. Then we have Mijuliputra. We have also three offices in Mijuliputra. With smaller offices, I'll just give the number of the small offices. If we go to the next slide, we will see that our local offices average. Local offices large, we have three of them, Bloemfontein, Pelco, and Puja di Chava. Average offices, we've got nine of them. The local offices small, which is now 10 service points, is 30. And then we have health facilities, 26 of them that are connected. And ports of entry, 8 ports of entry. 4 of them are very small ports of entry, and the other 4 are bigger ports of entry. Then we have 11 mobiles, of which only 6 is operational. The other 4 is being repaired as we speak. We hope within the next month or so they will be ready to be used. Then we have 6 tourism centers that we're using. Right now, total offices in the whole district is 76. And we are the ones that are really working is that are operational is 71. This is just the distribution of the offices. Can you go to the next slide? The next slide, I'm now reporting on performance in terms of civic services, health registration within 30 days. In the report, you'll see we have highlighted this year the 30 days. And people that are registered, children that are registered after 50 days, that's 31 days and so on, and then the late registration of birth. We showed this just to see are we getting there in, because our intention is all children must be registered within 30 days. If you look at April, we registered a high number than 31 days. In other words, if we can reduce, our intention, the reason why we report like this is we want to look at how do we reduce the 31 days to fall into the 30 days so that we make sure that every child is registered within 30 days. You will see for this quarter we have registered 10,393 children within 30 days, but we still have 4,158 that are falling outside that 30 days. There are reasons, that probably the reasons is that people are still not really realizing the importance of registering within 30 days. And this is why we work with the stakeholder forums to say, if we can let the people know and keep on informing the people about the 30 days, then we will move these people from 31 days into the 30 days bracket, which is very important for us. Then we have the late registration of birth, which is the one that's very problematic. And people who have never been registered and but are already over 15, about 15 and above, you'll see there's 2,665. It's quite high, but it's lower this year if you compare with the previous year. I think the previous year we had about 4,000 something of labor registration, lower this year. But it is a problem, because this is where people who are non-South Africans take advantage and want to be South Africans, and they use all the tricks to want to be South Africans. In the Free State, in the most of the people who want to be South Africans are the Lesotho citizens, who really want to become South African, and they are trying this method to get into becoming South African. The 30 days is quite important. Can we go to the next slide? Yeah. Then we have the late registration of birth. This is just the numbers for this year, 2,057. We had a closing balance of 2,364, and the new applicants that came is 2,665. So the numbers are quite high. There are people that are rejected. You can see it's a high number, 498 we reject. When we found out that this person is not qualifying to be a South African, he's actually a super citizen and non-South African. And there's a number that we refer to the immigration services to investigate to see whether these people are real South Africans or not. We go to the next one. ID applications. On the ID applications, we're just showing the first issues against the V issues. And the reason for that is when Home Affairs took a decision to increase the price for the ID, it was because people would lose an ID, and it is not necessarily lost, but they would come back to Home Affairs and come and apply for another ID, and only to find out they found the ID later on. So the numbers were very high. In the past, the numbers of reissues were almost double the numbers of the first issue, and we should be concentrating a lot on the first issue. If you look at this, the numbers of first issues are very high, higher than the reissues, but there's still a high number of reissues, meaning that there's still a lot of people who lose their IDs and they come and apply for another ID. I hope when we move to the smart card, this will be something that stops people losing their IDs. And then we have the next part, which shows the first issues, which officers are really dealing with a lot of first issues in the province. And you can see that we have Bloemfontein is highest, then Velkopolos, Putadichaba, but this year is because that's where the population is, most of the population. The reissues against the first issues, you will see it's higher for all this month. It's only in April where we have higher reissues, more reissues than first issues. And also in June, we also had higher reissues than the first issues. If you look at we have targets that we are targeting for the quarter, and some of the targets is to make sure that an application of a reissue or a first issue is then taken up within one day and put into track and trace so that the person, the owner of the ID, is not waiting too long for the ID to come forth. We need to cover the 45 days. Of making sure an ID is back, the issue and the first issue and 54 days. We have school programs where we deal with the Department of Education, going to the schools, target schools, especially matriculants, making sure that they get their IDs, applications for IDs. And we go to the schools and you see that the target is 50 schools. Per quarter, we've done 154 schools, more than what is expected. The number of applications is also quite good. What we look at is to make sure that the IDs come back within the 54 days time. And go to the next slide. You're going up now. Yep. The duplicate cases, these are the most problematic cases where people, we've advertised this, we've asked people to come forth to look at their IDs, whether their IDs is not a duplicate. It's very difficult to get people coming forth. We assume those people who don't come forth is because they know that ID is the wrong ID that they have in their hands. Because obviously if you have an ID and it's correct, and you are told that ID is a duplicate, you will come forward to say, change, correct my ID. But many people don't come forward. We call them, we go to their houses, we don't get them, and the IDs are not finalized because of duplicates. So you have number of unfinalized cases, about 215. and go. Passports, a lot of tourist passports, 4,151 for the quarter, just for this April, June. And temporary passports, most of the people who take temporary passports are going to Lesotho. The number of temporary passports has gone up, even though the temporary passports are only for a year, and the real passport is for about 10 years. The reason for this is the price for the passport, for the temporary passport, is half of the price of the real passport. However, we always say to people, it doesn't take you that long again to wait for the passport. It takes you a week to have a passport. In most cases, people will take the temporary because it took too long for them to wait for a permanent passport. So we do see here, I think the price is the issue for the temporary passport to be so much. We also want to report on immigration statistics, the immigration, especially at ports of entry. Now we have these 8 ports of entry. Our big port of entry that are very, very busy is Maseru and Ficksburg. And you see the numbers there in terms of the numbers of people traveling in and out, both South Africans and foreigners who go in and out. Very high in Maseru and Ficksburg. Maseru, the highest. The reason for that, Maseru is located next to, Maseru and Lady Brand are next to each other, and they are business people who are trading from Lady Brand, who trade in Maseru. So they travel in and out on a daily basis, meaning that there's always a movement of people from Maseru to Lady Brand daily. And this is why the numbers are so high. Now, everybody who crosses, we have to catch on the system to say you went through. You'll find one person is crossing 3 times or 4 times a day because it's because of business trading. One of the challenges here is the port of entry infrastructure in Maseru is terribly bad. Because if you go through, only one car can go through the gate. Meaning that if during peak hours, there's a lot of cars coming through. Now you have to let them stop, and the people must get off and go into a window to clear their passport and back into the car and then leave. That takes a long time. That's why in most cases, I get plus minus when it's every time. Lots of SMS, plus minus 10 every time when it's that people are saying the queue is too long. But the queue must be long if you have an infrastructure where only one car can go in and goes through to the other side. I know that there is money that's set aside by the DG to improve the infrastructure there. At least to allow that 3 or 4 cars can pass at a time, and we have a situation like in a toll gate where people can just call and give their passport and we clear them in the drive-through. If that can happen, the people can be cleared much faster in the area than it is happening now. So that's the challenge in the port of entry, especially in Maseru. Then we have deportations at the inspectorate. The numbers of deportations in the area has really increased. A lot of people that we deport, most of those people that are deported are from Lesotho because it's a direct deportation. We deport them, but obviously the following day they are back. It's like transporting the people every day, quite a hectic process. But I think there was recently a meeting with the Minister of Lesotho, with our Minister. I'm sure they are discussing how can we deal with these issues, so that we don't necessarily become a transport for them every time in and out. They do not come back through the border, in my view. They do not come back through the border gate, but they've gone through the border line where they cannot be detected. Then we have permitting. Permitting is quite a problematic part of it, because there we wait a lot for the, lot of people are waiting for permits, especially permanent residents. There is a problem, but the problem in most cases is the head office. These are the numbers that we have. Then the next part is really dealing with our queries. We have a query register every office where people who come to the office and do not get good services or do not get satisfaction, there's a desk where they will write the dissertation, and in most cases it would be, I've been waiting for my best certificate for a year. I've been waiting for my ID for 2 years. And then the people would have to look where is the problem really. Now we classify them to say the queue, is it a civic issue or is it an immigration issue, either permitting or so, or is it an issue of, now these are the numbers. If you look at the numbers, just for civic, from April to now, 113 queries, and 4 for permitting. 28 queries are resolved, and most of these 28 are only in the civic section, and the others very difficult to resolve. This picture is just to depict. We tried in the province to have all our officers look the same, so that if a person goes into a home affairs, whatever home affairs he goes, he finds the same home affairs. And here would be our outreach programs. We go out to outreach programs on a weekly basis, where we go out with other stakeholders like SASA and social development and health. And when we then, people come and we serve them from the mobile. And it's really helpful for us to have the mobiles dealing with that. I would like to give over just the last part of our presentation. And there will be one slide later, and I want to go over to the finance director just to present the other few things. I think it's about support services, which really reports to the finance director. Chair.
Thank you, this is, in fact, it just shows the staff profile, and that head of, you can see that it's made a mistake, head of group, we have actually increased the number of our staff in the province. Last year, the membership was 14%, maybe 89. At the moment, we are still 156 partners, who have provided a group to the equity there, the medicine, disability, female disability service, in our staff company. So we still are having some changes there. You can see that the number there, 9 for stability, and then which is more than 1.56%. And then we also do the government management government system in the program, where in the last cycle we have actually completed this 100%, but 100% year we have been actually doing by end of September. We expect to be at 100%. Well, we also visit the staff development in the province, where in the first part of this the activities that are trying to create the TDF training for another supervisor, and then also cost control and the national policy and protocol team, and doing some services for the training of any mediation of patients in the place, and also in the cost control and the difficulties. This is just the indication of what we have trying to do in the first part. Then we do have the system that communicates to rest of the staff, which is the connection to the staff. We do have the top management meeting that we meet there protecting, and then we also have a bottom management meeting where we meet transport managers. And district management meetings also weekly staff meetings, weekly and Saturday meetings that we have in the project. On the top of the employee wellness, these are the activities that are essentially taking place in the project. The occupational and safety, the public and trade workers in all districts, going to the department of health. We also have the absenteeism management, training managers for all trades on absenteeism, because it also comes a challenge in the public. And then, employee wellness, support services, and morale and support measures are given to the staff during the difficult periods. We also have activities there together with the workforce, okay, where we are celebrating the great example of professional leader. We then prepare practices to the top. Then, on the type of the finances, as the province, we will allocate the budget, that is 140 million, then divided into the four categories, the compensation, 180 million, social services, 9.8 million, and then the capital, 1,000. This is the performance of the province. We compared with one last year prior part-time performance, where in Bacalis we have started putting the what's called 3D. But when you look at the overall, it's actually moving well because of the norm. But when you watch the activities, you will see that we've got a similar spread on good services,
just on top of that, the new appointment that we had is from 69 to 563. So those are some people who are all good services. Where at the moment, last year we had 42% as opposed to 25% now in terms of that. But overall, we are quite appearing good to say that it's been 4% because of the salary, what you call, rise. So we also indicated to those reasons why we are actually.
Because now your mic is off. And you can see the record of what you're saying.
Thank you, the chairperson. As I was actually saying, the performance of the province in terms of finance is actually looking good. But when you go to the overhead plan, that's where you see that we really have a serious problem in the first quarter, sitting at 42%. Because of the, we know reasons why we are actually at that, because of the new appointments and also the number of leaders that has actually increased, which puts pressure in the province, because the goods and services is the budget that we normally use to ensure that the civic services and the immigration, they go to the villages and do their functions. So we have actually indicated that the reasons why are we really at that level. So I think according to the norm, we're supposed to be at 25, but we're sitting at 24% on overall, which is quite perfect. But going to any crisis, you see that really on goods and services under pressure. And then the heading is the procurement of 22 additional, we received 22 additional vehicles to support business. Also, and 70% of our fleet also is quite old, which we need to place there ever in the, what you call, for in the mechanical, and we are really spending a lot of money. So we need to really move fast in changing the fleet. So these are the reasons why we are coming under that, what we call, civil spread. The appointment of additional officers, 26, also really put pressure on that. So we did also submit a budget pressure to indicate to say that we are going to have a pressure of 6 million as the province on goods and services. So these are just reasons. Then you also look at the issue of the payment of invoices, synthesis, because it's one of our critical area that we need to monitor. The province has been really moving well since even from last year to until even the first quarter. We, in the first quarter, we received 241 invoices, where 208 were paid within 10 days. Only 7, that's why we had some technical challenges in terms of the invoices, but the site timing will actually indicate individually what could be the reason. You can actually tell, but they are more on the technical what aspect, because we monitor that process, where we couldn't actually proceed because the service provider might have changed the banking account, and then we have to wait and re-register, and we already have received the invoice, so obviously it will actually jump in. Essence, what I'm trying to say is when you look at it, it's like we are at 100%, because those are things that we could actually control. It's the fault of the service provider and so forth. So this is talking to the very same issue that I've just presented. The next slide. This is just the indication of the asset in the province, because it's one of the our challenges in the province that we need to really look at. We just did the comparison there of the last year's performance and also the current assets. We do have in total currently 9,100 assets in the province, which worth 43 million, and they are categorized into minor assets and capital assets. Last year you can see that we have actually 8.something, which we have actually sort of improved in terms of the change in terms of assets. But it will also come down because we have to dispose other assets in this current financial year. Thank you, I've already spoken to that. Now, on the fleet, this is our cost driver. And we understand why the cost driver, because service delivery is sitting under this, what we call fleet, because they use mostly vehicles to be able to achieve the sales and also service the client. So we do have in total 129, what you call, vehicles, but only 11 are not vehicles, but we call them the mobile offices. So in other words, it's 126. Where out of that 124, now they are actually functional, which is 98.5% that are actually running. And then if we've got 11 mobile trucks, as presented by my boss here, then only the 5 are actually functional, and then 6 is functional. So all in all, our fleet is 95%, which is actually functional in that regard. So on the corruption and prevention cases, I will then hand over to my boss here to complete. Thank you.
The
anti-corruption and in the province is really very reactive, because we just have investigators. We're still looking out to get a prevention person that deals with prevention. However, we ask the counter-corruption people also to go out and really tell people about the consequences of corruption. However, for this year, if you go to the next slide, you will see that the opening balance when we started 1st of April, we had 25 cases. 18 of them were already submitted, the reports were submitted, meaning that we still had 7 cases that were still under investigation. Then we received 11 new cases and 7 arrests. Now this arrest, the 7 were arrested by the police, and we also suspended these people. And now there's still a case for them, and they were also at the port of entry, Credence Port. And then there are also a project-driven investigation, 4 of them, which says we have about 29 cases that are busy with as we speak. The fraud and corruption cases, go back to that. Fraud and corruption cases, these are the cases of the people that now were arrested, and now the case is sitting. This is a labor relation cases. Misconduct is 3, and they are still under investigation. We have vetting, a vetting official that deals with vetting. We believe all people must be vetted to work for the department. At this stage, we have 60, number of clearance issued to date from April is 65. Current staff members is 263, and all these 67 newly appointed officials in the first quarter. 67 forms has already been submitted already. Ulwali is the security company that is contracted, looking after all our offices. We only have 9 security officers that are our own, but the rest are Ulwazi, it's contracted. Then we have also a security company JFOP security that collects money from 6 offices where there's high volumes of money, so to not to risk the money. The achievement here is we wanted for this year to connect 3 hospitals for the whole year from 1st April to next March. We have already connected 1 in the first quarter, and it helps us to increase the 30 days because it will improve when people can register children at the hospital. We have increased capacity at Maseru Bridge, 35 extra people. That's where we had a real serious problem. So we increased the numbers of 35 people. Pittsburgh we increased with 9 people. Caledonsport, 6 people. The unfortunate thing is in Caledonsport, we increased the number with 6 and 7 people were arrested. So it went back to the normal because the 7 people were then arrested for fraud. Then we've received, the other thing is the decentralization of procurement has really helped us a lot, because now we are able as a department to pay in 30 days because now we can do it in the province instead of asking somebody in Pretoria to pay before the 30 days is done. So it actually helps us with that. We've increased the fleet, which is quite helpful. And one of the very important things is the cluster meetings. In the Free State, most of the cluster meetings were not sitting anymore. But they started sitting again this year. We had almost 3 meetings already. The good thing about the cluster meeting is that security is very important. We deal with issues of illegal migrants. One of the projects that has been done there is a project where with the police, with immigration inspectorate in the province, we go town by town registering people, foreign business owners, to be able to know how many people are around who are foreign business people, which is quite helpful. The challenges is the infrastructure, as I said, in Maseru, even houses for people to stay in Maseru. People have to drive about 50 kilos every day to go to work because there's no houses at the border itself. But I think this one has been addressed by DG, and soon we will be sorting out. The next one is the deportation of the Lesotho people. Every week, every day, almost be deported. Deport the people, but they are back again in the country. And some of them are being arrested, and then we go and collect them from after they finish their sentence. We have to pick them up at at the jails and still take them to correctional services and still take them to Lesotho. So it's quite a big problem in terms of our services in the province. Thank you, Chair. I think that's
thank you, my episode. Honourable members, I'm not sure whether we go for questions or we ask Eastern Cape to make their presentations because other members won't be here. Have other meetings to go to, so I'm not sure how to handle this. May I get your direction, please?
Chair, I suggest that you deal with the question.
Okay, that was the input by Free State. Could we have your hands for questions, please? Honorable Asibone.
Thank you, Chair Person. The provincial manager and acting provincial coordinator. What I'd like to know is what is the difference between the two things that the Free State is the only province that has got the two posts. My other question, Catherine, is on slide 52. The number of personal visitors. Are they fully functional? Can person go there and come with a refugee? Or are they just drive on her? That's what I'd like to know. And on slide 43, the compiling of reports on other cases, I don't understand it.
Another question?
On the basis of the invoices, the executive, there's been a throughout in terms of waiting for the directive from every component of the invoices. I just want to check the concept. As a person who got like that, finances have been decentralized. So I just wanted to get clarity in terms of what are the other issues that have to be then directed from head office and so on and so forth. And again, in terms of accrual care, normally these are services that were done in the second financial year, but were not paid to them. Then got paid, is it because of the non-availability of invoices at that particular time or what? I just want to understand. Last weekend, when you talk about assets, I think we're flat to the numbers. I know it's not easy, but it's important for us to know this. This is 15,000 in terms of numbers. It's not easy to lead to that. I can say it's not easy. But I think for sometimes it helps to have that in the form, so that at least you have a record in terms of what assets are we talking about. So I'm not sure how it's going to be done, but I'm just taking away the mechanism. The Canadian has been doing that for a lot in terms of understanding, because people talk numbers on as a committee. Sometimes we go into an oversight.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're going to do, because it's only numbers that are being passed. What are the issues that you need to check in terms of assets?
And that might be so the 76 appointed officials, were they vetted or are they still going through a process of training, because we have a learner academy, or what is the process when appointing people? And I'm worried about the 6 dysfunctional mobile units. When these units are dysfunctional, how do you cover other areas that are supposed to be covered by the mobile units? The G4 security company, we used to have problems last year with regard to this company, if I remember well. What is the case now? Are we still having problems? Because there was a problem of reconciling because they were keeping the books, the deposit books, and taking time to return the deposit books to the offices. What is the status now? Okay, over to you. And the Temuti as well.
I think Mudi can start first and move on to the questions.
Thank you. I will start with the one for the mobile truck, the functional versus dysfunctional. Indeed, one remember, when we are saying the mobile truck is functional, when you go there, you come up with a certificate immediately. When we are saying it's dysfunctional, it's just to catch information and they go to the office and bring it there, you will get perhaps your certificate the following day. That's the difference. But the other functional, yes, it's an immediate. Then on the issue of the invoice, 30 days versus the accruals, indeed it is correct that the procurement and payment is centralized to the process. Now what happens is, at the end of financial year, we then have these invoices that must be paid before the 26th of March, because it takes 3 or 4 days for money to run. So obviously in between, from 26th to 31st March, they are holidays. So now as you receive invoices on the 27th, surely it's going to appear in the next financial year. And then where you don't even have a budget, because this invoice belongs to the previous financial year. Then wait. And say, CFO, in head office now, we've got 300,000 worth of invoice in terms of value. Now give us direction. Should we continue paying, or will we make a specific budget that will actually hit the approvals? Then we wait a bit. As we wait, obviously the time is running until head office says, okay, Susan, provinces continue to pay using this allocation. Then we pay. Then that's when we discover that some are already above the days. But now we start from the offices. That's when we lose days. It's not that bad. The head office wasted time. Not all. Time wasted within the province as invoice must be certified first. So as we see them, the invoice is every 5 days to be at 30 days. And you wait for the office. They respond perhaps after 2 days. Already you are late in that. So that is the other aspect of the approval. And then on the issue of the accruals now, it is correct that especially if I was to present the list of these accruals, I do have the list of those what you call orders that were still outstanding, where we have enjoyed the service, but invoices are still on route, or the companies are still waiting, especially my travel that we are using for traveling. They cannot bill you unless they are billed by hotels and what you call SAA. So now you wait until the first, you still don't have invoices. Until they deliver the invoice, that's what you pay. So already you are on the accruals because they've enjoyed the service, but you haven't paid. You don't want to pay, but the invoice is not coming. You even went to the office, can you submit an invoice? How can we? They are saying, how can we invoice while we don't even have invoice from hotels, from this other service provider? So these are the reasons, and this is what's actually creating an what you call the accruals, even across the province. That's that we have, specifically for the traveling agencies, but we don't just be, it's not like on any other supplier, where when you actually service, you get invoice immediately. But service, what you call it, just traveling agencies, they wait to be billed first so that they can bill. So those are the issues that are actually happening, especially when you go towards the end of our financial year. On the aspect of the asset, yes, honorable member, it is correct. I tried to summarize that. I've got the asset register, which details each and every information about the asset, in terms of description, in terms of everything, the age and the values and so forth. Here I was just trying to sort of sum it to say, as the province has got 9,100 assets worth of 43 million, but we've got details in terms of those 9,000 assets, their lifespan and everything, the disposal and so forth. This is a document that we submit for financial statements. Yeah, here I was just summarizing it so that it will fit within the presentation. So on the side of the GFO, it is correct, we are still even experiencing problems now with the form. And then we raise this matter, we send this information to health because especially with impact now on the bank exceptions, on the revenue, to clear it, because they come at their own time to collect the money, and then as they break, don't deposit immediately. And now what we have raised with our head office to say, it is very complex because the service level agreement was signed before the functions were decentralized. So it's quite complex for us as a province. to have this nice meeting to monitor this SLA. We then suggested the provinces to say, please, decentralize the service level agreement. So I deal with my problem with the G4 in the province. That. So I'm sure now, because the contract is still on, the new contractors will be signed, those inputs will be on, but then we won't want to have any problem. But it is correct, we are having a similar challenge. I get emails from offices about G4 in all our offices.
When is the
contract signed? Not... not sure about that. Thank you.
I think the contracts have been signed at the head office, so in most cases we have that problem, yeah. Chairman, just deal with the first question, the coordinator. Every province has got a coordinator. The coordinator's work is really to, because we should monitor every district whether they really produce or they meet their targets as they should be meeting their targets. All of these DMOs in each of the districts must write a report on a weekly basis, send it to the PM's office. Now, this coordinator is coordinating all that information so that we are able to see which district is performing and which district is not performing. So it's a deputy director position, which is in the PM's office dealing with that. Every province has got it. And we've got an acting person. However, the post has been advertised. Soon the person will be appointed. The 76 people that are appointed were trained. Thank you, Chair. The 76 people were trained, but all of them, the process of the vetting is being taken on to board. They've all submitted their applications, and the process is taking place already.
More questions?
No.
Thank you, Dr.
So I was coming with a proposal in terms of the G4 to say the two things, the G4 and the processes in terms of invoice processing. We run for an issue of the security, what we call it, coin, in our area, where they have the same problem in terms of collecting money and what is. And I was told that we cannot terminate that thing, that there's been a national issue and what is. But there we took a stance to say, we are not utilizing coin until such time they improve on 1, 2, 3. And because we did that, they then immediately called head office. It was now pushed by them to engage on that particular issue because they didn't want to lose out. So ultimately, they came to terms with what we wanted to incorporate in terms of how they are operating. Something we need not wait until head office acts. But these people have an interest working in that area. We need to then begin to make them shake. If head office is not moving, they must be the ones who are pushing head office because of the pressure they get from your side. So I'm saying you need to go and devise mechanism in terms of ensuring that you do some shape. The second one in terms of processing of invoices, where the third parties are involved, where you would find that you have to wait for other people for you to be able to issue your own invoice. We made a ruling to say we are processing invoices within, in our case it was 14 days. So if we have rendered services to us and we don't get invoice within 7 days, you forfeit because we need to adhere to our principles. But we're not going to fail our policies because you people are not transmitting. And because they want money, they don't have to push whatever is supposed to give them information. So that within that time frame, they then have submitted so that you are also in your form within the time frame that you have not mentioned the turnaround time in terms of payment. So I'm saying we need to deploy strategies to ensure that these people comply and assist us in terms of delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Member. Those are some of the maybe steps that you could take to ensure that your work runs smoothly and without problems. Thank you, Honourable Members, and thank you. We said we are now going to Eastern Cape. That's the Cornelia Maburu and the doctor.
Good morning, and honourable members, and my colleagues, the guests. Honourable member was asking me if I'm settling well in the province. I think I do admit that I have settled in the province, and come back to know a few challenges there and there. Same for that reason. As the province had already worked on a two-day workshop to deal with the problems and challenges that I've come across in a year and about 2 months since I've been there. And I think yesterday we took another decision that we need, as a core management of that province, we need to go for a border ride because of numerous problems. That are persistently rearing their ugly heads. Of course, you do have, you know, the willingness amongst the colleagues, you know, to do the work that is expected of us. Yes, the presentation, these are the contents that we'll be going through, and let's move on. Yes, we have that introduction and background. Yes, as we know, that Eastern Cape, can go back to the introduction, please? Yes, we all know that it's the second largest province in the Republic, and it's quite extensive. Ranking third in the RSA in terms of population, it spends at about 6.5 million. It's quite big, and we also know the political background to that and the problems that accrued out of such a legacy of having a number of our citizens requiring registration at a very later stage of their lives. We indicating in the next bullet that we have two IDs at the Industrial Development Zone, which is East London and Kuha, and a number of other critical industries that are a reason for a large volume of permitting that takes place around those two IDZs. The last bullet there, we trying to sell our province that it is a tourist destination, and for that reason, again, permitting and passport sessions are kept busy by the number of tourists that come through. Then the languages that have been spoken there. In the next bullet, it is the issue of illicit citizens that are being exploited, especially around the area of the Karoo interior for ship sharing. And our inspectorate that worked around to make sure those people are properly documented. The infrastructure remains critical, and the result, the rugged roads that we run our mobile trucks, they render our trucks unworkable and dysfunctional because of the condition. And from time to time, they have to be sent to repair for that reason. We also have made great strides in delivering services to the commonly known NPR campaign that started in 2009-2010, and subsequently the LRB MOPAP, the previously, if members would remember, and the stakeholder forums that are championing the NPR campaign. And they've since been complaining that despite the high impact outreaches that we had undertaken, a number of people remain undocumented. And when the previous minister wanted to close the LRB in December 2010, was restrained by that call from the stakeholder forum. The new minister has also detected that we still have such numbers of people who remain undocumented, and she has called upon us to conduct what we call an LRB mop-up campaign. The Eastern Cape has become the pioneer of that mop-up. The subject priorities remain the same ever since 2009, and the new minister has signed upon them as well. And all the work that we do is all around such priorities. Let's move on. And the map, it indicates, signifies the spatial distribution of the model upon which we're working of the districts and local municipalities. In that slide is to indicate the proportion of the languages that we have in the province, and also the population demography of the province across the district. Let's move on. The economic overview is also to underline the fact that this is the poorest province in the Republic, and it's largely, you know, having a high rate of unemployment and a low literacy level that are contributing to the problems that affect our services insofar as to provide proper delivery of services to our clients. Tourism, again, we're marketing our province. Literary levels, as I've already indicated, is to the extent to which they affect, you know, our the delivery. The footprint, the former regional office, we do have six in the province, and the former district office, we do have functional 24 offices with the permanent service points. Which are supposed to be 36, only 23 are functional because of financial constraints. These PSPs that have been announced to be in existence in some areas in the province, they are not forthcoming. The annex office, in the sense that the then refugee office is now closed, and we refer to it as annex office. It is not fully operational because it's dealing, you know, with it's not dealing with the new operations. And that we in March we can I say we lost about 12 officials from precautionary suspension that had to be undertaken by the department following chaotic nature and the extent of fraud and corruption that is taking place there. Health facilities, we have about 47 that are deemed to have been connected, but the ones that are functional, there are only 21 because of the challenges that we face. The port of entries, we have 7. Of that, there are 2. The land ones that are not, the 2 land ones that are not, DHA is not part of. The 2 song centers, we have 29, 3 are not operating, the 2 district offices operating from 2 song centers. The management demarcation in terms of the new operating model, As it stands, it's myself and it's Dr. Saladin, the director of finance. The complement of the DMOs is not yet attained because of financial constraints in the department. And you have the DMOs who are there, four of them, struggling over two districts. With the Afrenzo district that is vacant, Mr. Mnono, who is at OR Tamu, is taking care of it. And if you look at it, he would be responsible for 7 offices in Afrenzo and 12 in OR Tamu. And one DMO, his own office, therefore having about 20 offices under his jurisdiction. If you look at Jokabi, a DMO which is vacant, and DMO Gasa in Krizani is taking care of it, and would notice that she has 5 in Jokabi plus 10 in Krizani, therefore having 15 offices over her jurisdiction. And let's move on. The Amatole has been advertised and we have undertaken to interview. We remain with the last interview that must involve the DDG Civic Services. And for that, you would notice, members, that Buffalo City Metro is also vacant. So for those two, Buffalo City and Amatole, we have an acting DMO in there, and we have just rotated there to have someone, you know, of the same way, to have an opportunity to have the exposure of acting. Then the Sarah Bachman, which is manned by a DMO, that DMO also takes care of the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro Council, and will be in charge of those offices as well. Let's move on. I think we also signify, we continue to signify that in terms of the operational model, we have two metros, that is the Buffalo City Metro and the Nelson Mandela Bay one. And over 6 district municipalities and 37 local municipalities. That out of the 2 metros and 37 local municipalities, the department has 10 operational offices and 4 ports of entry in the 2 metros, and also present in 29 local municipalities. However, we have no presence in these. This is the Great Kai, Ngoba, Ikwezi, Okama, Ngwanga, and Solana. And the Ngoba is part of the band for the Tucson Center at Adelaide, but the process has not yet been finalized by the provincial government. There we further indicate those offices under those municipalities. Afrenzo, though, that's the one you visited. You paid an oversight visit. As you can see, Matatiele, Mzimvubu, to which we are so indebted to you for the proposals and recommendations you made. And we had reassured you, Chair, that we will go back there and review that visit. Indeed, we did that. Address some of all those issues that you raised. In particular, you were not happy at all at design, the state of that office. Dirty, chaotic, things not put in place, and the manager so chaotic himself, reporting to you things that were supposed to have done himself, and the DMO is working on him. Actually, we never wanted to tell you at that point. He was about to be, he's just come back from a 3-month suspension. He's been given a final warning. And I think out of that, he's promising now to bend to the rules of the employer. Yes, we can move on. These are the, then with the Christian, the municipality, that's present. Our presence in 2 municipalities, and all those areas are serviced by the mobile unit. Inoba, is awaiting finalization of Sisom Center and Arid, as we have indicated. In Sunday's River Valley, we will have office in Peterson. However, we have not been it has not been prioritized in this financial year. The areas where DHA is not present are serviced, as we have indicated, by mobile offices. Then target of the provincial business plan. In terms of the 30 days birth registration, for quarter one, provinces registered about 19,469 births within 30 days, which then translates to 95% of the quarter target. This number includes birth registration at front offices of 12,711 and health facilities, against a quarter target of 20,400, as it is indicated above there. I think we do believe that we did not achieve the target. Yet we do notice a marked improvement in terms of parents registering their children within 30 calendar days, as the registration of birth from 31 days to 14 years is decreased to a marked progress. Then the reasons are the common ones, you know, to everyone in the provinces. The mothers who do not bring their IDs when admitted, the newly born babies are not yet allocated with names, and the network bandwidth in the health institution not as strong as to stand the pressures of our own. The non-availability of DHA offices in local municipalities, which means that we're missing a number of these birth registrations in those towns, because they have to travel, and those who are unable to travel, then they just remain. And then building on the unnecessary LRB that we want to terminate. There we are making progress in terms of birth beyond 30 days. In quarter one, we have noted that we are making a dent. Instead of registering births beyond 30 days, we are now registering more of 30 days than the 31 to 1 year. Let's move on. The strategy and plan implemented to reduce LRB, for quarter one, the target was achieved. In terms of the MOPA plan that we made a reference to, that minister had directed us to step up. For the target, annual target is 201 in the province. What is referred to as hotspots. For the quarter, 55 areas were to be visited. The statistics then as follows. But in that area of OR Tambo and Alfredo that we went through, first issues were 2,842, reissues 192, LRB 630, and then birth registration within 30 days, we got about 60. Above 30 days, we got 181. 1 year to 14 years, 208. We also picked up marriages and deaths that were registered, about 48. IDs that they handed out, there were about 87. Revenue collected, 28,880. One thing that we noticed is that the councillors, our stakeholders, sometimes they do disappoint us. They don't go out to mobilize communities as they promise in the meetings that we have with them. Let's move on. The LRB, late registration of births, the opening balance being 1,023, the number of applications received, 2,979 in the quarter. Those that have been approved, I think it's a marked progress of 3,101. And as of now, we have created identity documents for 838. So there are more to come from those that have been approved. The ID applications first and the reissues. I think Free State has already indicated as well that despite the scare of an increased harvest, you still have more of reissues in some places than the first issues. I remember recently I received an email from a member from the white community who was requesting me to give him information to the fact that the mother is bedridden and she has mislaid the document, and therefore how are we going to assist her? So this thing, we had thought that it's among the Africans who simply throw away this document, go to these institutions, and because it is not there, which is required, simply go to Home Affairs. I even said to the client, immediately when you get that document, please return it to Home Affairs, the one that has been displayed. The ID document received from head office distributed to rightful owners. The open balance being 23,101. In April, that's the figure that we received and distributed. In May, in June, and still remain with 25,545. I think we've already noted that. And I think in our recent workshop, which you are going to consolidate the resolution of, amongst other things, we are to work out a strategy of how to distribute these IDs before the next IEC voter registration that is coming up in August and with September. School visits. In a school visit, that was the target of 994. And schools that have been visited, 480. And the number of applications collected, and the number handed over to learners. Here we do submit that we did not achieve the target, as only 48% of the planned visit were actually done. It is because programs are not properly communicated to the students by school principals or students not having money to pay photos. In hindsight, I reminisce that in the previous presentation here, we had promised that the MEC had undertaken to meet with us so that we can collaborate. Up until now, Chair, we haven't met with the MEC because we're so busy and one is available, it's us, who are not available. But we do feel that we will insist on that partnership, because it is going to tremendously help us with the targets that we are to achieve in the province. Let's move on. The duplicate cases. For those who came forward for the multiple IDs, we had about 73, and there were cases that were resolved in that quarter about 7. And duplicate cases coming forward, people sharing ID number, it was that 527. And cases resolved, there were about 99. And people really come through as they've been requested. And we hope that as Minister had announced in her budget speech, that end of this year, all of those IDs will be invalidated. And I think this, we will close the chapter, you know, in respect of the duplicate. The passport application, that's the number, excuse me, for the tourist passport, for child, official, maxi, temporary, and documents for travel purposes. In all, we have 6,686 that we have produced. The uncollected ones, about 2,223. The queries remain a problem in the province and across the department with other provinces as well. I think they are really bothering the minister. Somebody told me, was it yesterday, she visited the VVR and she was having a whole lot of queries that are sent to her. And she was taking everyone to task as to why these issues are not corrected in order to readily make available the documents that the clients have applied. So we're trying our level best as well to make sure that the mistake that we caused, because we share the problem as well as the offices, whilst the back office as well at head office, they have fair share of the problems of the queries that are being produced. The stakeholder forum, we have launched 45 stakeholder forums. Two metro, as we indicated previously, that we have, six district municipalities and 37 local municipality forums. All the forums have been launched, except the provincial forum. Previously, we had reported to you and the honorable members that we were battling to get a buy-in with the provincial legislature. However, we did manage to get a buy-in with them. But I think the person who has been assigned with the duty of communicating with us is the one who is failing us now. We were even thinking that we should simply go to her office now, because she keeps on promising that she'll be reaching out to us, and she doesn't do it at all. From the 45 existing forum, as at end June 2013, 17 were maintained and 28 did not have meetings. This is what happens. It staggers. It's not bad with Eastern Cape. Forums are functional, but there are months where you don't get any report of the forum sitting regularly, because what we're saying, they must regularly sit to address the aspirations of the department and of the client. We do have the queen, as we indicated previously. Let's move on. The first one, that maternity certificate you had reported previously, which was the initiative of the OAT Tambo Stakeholder Forum. That maternity certificate is now being used by almost all the health institutions in the province. Remember, we're saying health through the stakeholder forum was complaining that Home Affairs is not supposed to use the road to health card, because it's supposed to be a confidential document. It cannot be used for as a way of confirming the validity of the application of an applicant. So the OAT Tambo came up with that idea. And now I think it is working. It has a very key security feature. It has a serial number, it has a professional number, the SANC registration. As I've indicated, it's almost used by all the health institutions in the province. The traditional affairs, here we have piloted in 10 tribal authorities to go back to the previous arrangement of the traditional leaders during the apartheid time. They were assigned to take care of every person who comes into their fold in their different tribal authorities. And now, in that pilot, we want them to assume the duties of death, IDs, customer marriages, and immigration matters. I think the pilot came to an end on the 30th of June, and soon we'll be getting a report, and we'll be doing all the necessary consultations with our legal services, so as to propose that for us to enhance the data integrity, which is used in support of applications to extend our footprint and reach awareness and service delivery, we should undertake to have the traditional leaders to assist us in doing the work of the department. Social development, we have reported here that they have a NIST system where they have a list of all the community members in their places where they are found. We were supposed to be collaborating to reach out to those people who are needy, but I was told, the report that I got was that this idea was sold to head office, and when it was supposed to have been undertaken, there were some problems. I'm yet to follow up on what really happened here, because we really thought that this was going to assist us a great deal to reach out to our clientele that requires our services. The regulations, here were referring to the stringent measures to make it difficult for people who come up for LRB, the late registration of birth. These registrations, the one of citizens and the stringent one, they have been touted with all the stakeholders for that. There was public participation, and they all had their views, and they are aware of what is to happen. But we were happy when Minister said by 2015 she will be closing LRB altogether. So we are hoping that between now and 2015, we must make sure now that every citizen is documented, so that there is no one who is confronted with a stringent measure and is locked out of the system to be a recognized citizen. The targets in provincial business plan in terms of immigration, the temporary residence visas, the applications received and quality checked, there were that much, 2,114, and the applications sent to head office, 1,823. However, there has been a very slow production around the temporary residence visas because of the track and trace that has been introduced, and it has been so slow. However, head office has addressed that issue. The top 500 nationalities applying for the TRV is the is Nigeria, Ghana, Pakistan, Zimbabwe, and Bangladesh. The PLA permits, you have 145. The certificates received from head office, 36. Let's move on. The land port, Passatnet, that's the one you visited, and you also identified serious problems, honorable members. I remember it was the boom gate that we found, open, which was not secure. I think now it is. They make sure that the boom is in place, and they will be open only when it allows, foreign nationals to pass. The office is still very small, as you complained. The number of immigration officials in that office remain as it is, because there are no funded posts there. And what else? I'm trying to recall some of the serious issues. Maybe you may pose the question around that. However, we hope the minister has already agreed to taking minister back there because of the serious problems that we have identified. More and above all those we have identified, there are others, serious security issues that we require minister to attend to. The the cost control, the seaports, we have that type of situation in the East London Harbour, for the ships, the crew members, passengers. That's the total we have for Elizabeth Harbour. For the ship's crew and passengers, that is the total that we have. And similarly, with Cassius Nag and others, do not have sufficient personnel and staff to clear the ships. And if there has to be that kind of assignment to be undertaken, the officials will be drawn from East London and Port Elizabeth. And you can imagine these towns are about three hours apart. Yes. Immigration services, in terms of the annex office, as we have indicated, no new applications are processed in the office. The new arrivals in May, June, and then the total. Then the interviews conducted in April, there were 332. In May, 381. In June, 365. And in total, we have 1,068. The rejected, we have that total of 89 over those months. The rejected manifestly unfounded over those months, we have that. And the approved, we have that over the month. And the total being 3,952. As we have indicated, honorable members, this has been a very chaotic office where corruption and fraud were so rife, and for that reason, 12 officials were suspended. And we had to put measures in place to make sure that office is operating. We have a contingent team that is sent to Cape Town in order to experience and have some kind of a training so that they are aware of what is to be done. For your information, members, that office is working very well. But of course, you still get the report that those few that remain are still perpetrating the acts of fraud and corruption. However, the work that is expected is being appreciated by head office and the minister, who had at one time called upon all the managers of the annex or the refugees offices. The inspectorate activities, employers charged, we always hear give ourselves a high number, some kind of an unrealistic expectation, when we know that in terms of inspectorate, we don't do well because we have few inspectorates in all the provinces, for that matter. And the kind of target that we assign ourselves is so unrealistic, and we end up, for instance, for quarter one, when we expected to have at least for employers charge 93, we only charge only 5. Transgressor of departmental legislation, our target is 632. In the quarter, 157. You can imagine for the year, if we could manage, you know, to reach out to what we had assigned ourselves to attain. Well, as I've just indicated, we did not achieve. Let's move on. The inspectorate activities, well, for those detected undocumented foreigners, then we always make sure, of course, there are a number of them that you are unable to reach out to, but with those that we have managed to reach out to, we then deal with them. The documented foreigners transferred to Lindela, that's the lot we manage, and the lot, well, of course, acknowledging the fact that there are many of others as well, we always manage to send them to Lindela. In inspected investigation finalized, that's the one we have, and at least 45% and at least 80% we manage to finalize. Let's move on. The cases of fraudulent marriage, the province has overachieved the target. Since 24 cases of fraudulent marriages of convenience have been finalized. This practice is very, very, very rife. Let's move on. Then I'll hand over to my colleague, Dr. Johannes. Over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sondine Johannes, Director of Finance and Support for Eastern Cape. Someone moved, Dr. Jagger.
Oh.
Anyway, we've got a staff complement of 810 post posts in the Eastern Cape, and we have 4,500 vacancies. I'm glad to present to you today that delegation for posts up to levels 8 has been decentralized to the provinces, so I'm confident that those 44 posts will be filled very soon. If you look at the 810, this is how we are split. As you can see, we are female-dominated in the Eastern Cape, with only 7 officials with disability. If you go to the next slide, you'll see in terms of equity, we are not doing very well. But unfortunately, this is something you can rectify only one post at a time. So we are, you know, very soon we'd like to reach these targets. In terms of people management, PMDS is working very well for the Eastern Cape. We're very glad to announce that. If you look at the budget, next slide. Overall, we are 26.1%. In terms of the number, it looks very pretty. But when you look at goods and services, which is where our operational budget is lying, Eastern Cape is at 49.9% already. And that is merely because of the additional fleet we've received. We need to maintain the fleet. We have got a refugee office where staff needs to, we had to send in staff to go and assist that office with the 12 that was suspended. Next slide. The rollout of supply chain functions is working very well in the Eastern Cape. Right now all the numbers are generated, you know, on the day. We do not wait for anyone in head office no more. Next slide. For the quarter, we have received 838 invoices in the Eastern Cape. 704 of those were, that's 84% within the 30 days. If you see above the 30 days, it's 102, above 86. These are system-related problems. Also, the majority of our invoices comes from Nexus, our travel agent, and this is creating a problem. And also, in at the provincial office, the bandwidth is very, you know, we've increased it. Today, actually, as we speak, Telkom is in there to improve the bandwidth so we can improve, you know, paying within 30 days. In terms of managing our assets in the province, we are doing quite well. The asset register is only updated within my office, so each of the offices where they've got asset controllers would submit any changes in writing to my office, and it's only at that juncture where the asset registers are updated. We've got approximately 14,800 assets in the province to a value of 46 million. Next slide. We've collected just over 8 billion in the first quarter. If you look at the month, you'll see that April is, if you can go back, thank you. In April, it looked like we didn't work much in the Eastern Cape, but actually we did. The system was closed off to ensure that, you know, the revenue collected falls in the correct financial year. So average, we collect about 2.6 million a month. Yes. If you look at the fleet, that is the fleet for the Eastern Cape. As of today, we've got 178 vehicles that are functional in province. And that is how we attend to business in the Eastern Cape with the fleet that we have. In terms of counter-corruption, cases are reported to head office, and they are, you know, decentralized from there. So if you look at the quarter, we've only received 4 cases. 2 of those were finalized, and the other 2, the report has been sent to head office. So we're waiting for the outcome of those. We often receive requests from, you know, our stakeholders. That is the thing that you see. And in the first quarter, we had 4 officials arrested for fraud in the farm. In terms of labor relations cases, there's 1 for fraudulent marriage. We've got 2 officials that is being investigated for misuse of our vehicle. We've got a misconduct, you know, charge there, as well as corruption. So there's 5 cases that we're dealing with as we speak. When you look at the security and cash in transit, there's a couple of offices that are not being serviced by G4S, and those are listed. The high volumes, the revenue bank daily and those not, is collected twice or thrice a week. And yes, we are also still experiencing the problem with G4S, but we have, you know, liaised with them, and it is substantially, you know, reduced. So they are now returning our deposit book so we can actually account for it. So we have interacted with them in the Eastern Cape. Staff interactions to ensure that decisions are disseminated to all levels. We've got the provincial management meetings that happens on a monthly basis. on a quarterly basis, we meet with the board management in the province, and the district managers are meeting monthly. And obviously, in our offices, there's, you know, daily meetings to make sure we're achieving our targets. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Seth. The achievement. The LRB MOPA meant to reduce late registration of that. As you indicated, we achieved the 65 identified areas. For that reason, we improved service delivery. The annex office, as I indicated, it has improved operational management following the continent arrangements that were made, the improved data integrity and reporting. Let's move on. The stakeholder forum. Challenges, as I indicated, some that are not fitting as required. We're making an effort towards reviving them. Amendments and duplicate cases add to the challenges that we have because they take too long to be resolved. Then the referral to Northern Point at headquarters for intervention, and also we were promised that one of the problems that caused the protracted delivery of these the amendments and duplicates is that the application and amendment are dealt with all at the same time. And now the office has undertaken to dealing the application from the amendment. In other words, the amendment or the rectification will be dealt with outside the application itself, so as to try and expedite the delivery of the application. The office accommodation remains a problem in those offices. I think Honorable Member McIntosh will be so interested to the Middle Drift line with bees and snakes, but it's work in progress in order to move to a new office. The shortage of immigration officers, we've already made reference to that, in particular to the port of entry. The mobile unit functionality, the non-functionality of mobile offices resulting to a itinerary is not fully honored and certificate not issued on the spot. I think the state has made reference to that as well. Shortage of IT equipment is another one as well.
Thank you, Eastern Cape. Honourable members, that was the input by Eastern Cape. The way Udenile worked here for a long time and he covered everything. So we don't even know where to start asking questions. It's time for questions. Charter of our visit in Eastern Cape has actually done some movements, taking from the report that was shut just today. I can see that Eastern Cape is breaking to the Free State to say, you know, the G4. Now they know that you have to shake these people for them to start doing something, which is good. Yesterday was the Northwest and the Northern Cape. There's one principle that was applied in terms of posts to say, one no longer going to sit here and listen to posts that were not filled, whichever reason it is. Posts are funded, we want a report that says we have filled this post. This is what this is, a process that we are embarking on for whatever outstanding post. Period. Nothing else. We're not going to discuss the issue of public works. It's administrative. We want offices, we want people to be accommodated correctly. And that's our position even today. The I saw that there's a list of offices that have to be dealt with in terms of the Eastern Cape, some of which we visited when we were there. And in fact, we were expecting a report that says this is how far we're gone in terms of those particularly the ones we have visited, the Bizana one, the Matatiel one. You remember we had a principal position when we lived there. And I think it's almost 6 months, 7 months. We were there in December or November. So we're expecting a change in terms of that. But here is this thing of the employers charged because of non-compliance. My worry is that we seek, and I think we need to correct it from the time where we approve the strike plan, where we put numbers in terms of saying we need to arrest or to visit so many, so that we ensure that so many are being charged. It's like we're allowing them to, you know, to not to be compliant because we have a number. So I think we need to change that particular approach so that we actually start at zero approach to say we don't tolerate anybody who is non-compliant. So that when we start counting, we are going minus, so that it becomes negative, that particular act of non-compliance. And the other thing is that when I saw they presented is the issue of the harbors. Not only that, but let's talk about the ports of entries. In most cases, we more focused on the numbers of arrivals and those who depart. It's also good. I think, again, we need to say, what are the measures that we put in place to ensure that we disallow illegal entrance and control at this particular border post? The numbers assist us in terms of ensuring that we know how many people go through this, whether we need to expand or we need to do something or whatever. But what is also important is the security feature of our country to say how exposed are we. What is that when we were in Kachamek, we said there's a high risk of people just entering and going because the gate was open, wide open. You know, if you drive a car there, it's not enough. We're actually demonstrating with that. That is nothing that stops us because you only see, it becomes visible the time it approaches the border post. And at that time, if that person then decides to go at a very high speed, he will just go past because the gate already open. By the time you want to stop, he's already in another country. You can't do anything about that person. So we still get a report that says we haven't done anything as far as employment is concerned in terms of ensuring, because one of the other things that we picked up is that we don't have enough personnel to search or screen the goods that are going in and out through that border post. So if that still remains 7 months down the line, it tells us that we are at risk as a country. It's just that I'm not sure Basotho are that violent. I know they like the livestock. So, but the good thing is that we know South Africans, especially Abu Dhabi, they get very much attracted to the Basotho women, so it can work to our advantage. But I think these are the areas that we really need to improve and put measures in place to ensure that things are flowing right. We believe that the other issues that we have raised when we were there are being attended to. It's just a short phase. We don't want to dig back into those to check whether they are being done, but we believe that you are trying to address those particular things. If you allow me, Chair, can I leave?
Give 5 minutes to respond. But one other issue that we need to address, I think, is the issue of ships clearer, because you remember we had a meeting in the agriculture, and we raised the issue, we are cheap laborers. That's good. You know? I know you know that. The reason we said we don't want the people from Lesotho is because they were the farmers were going to exploit the people from Lesotho, and here it is happening.
Mm.
So we need to, I'm not sure whether we're supposed to have a meeting again with agriculture and raise this concern as to we need to address this issue of self-shiras, whilst our own people are unemployed, they need to be trained to be sheep shearers, so we need to do something about that. Hey, this LRB mop up. Can you explain what you mean by mop up? Maybe unbundle that, what do you mean by mop up? And then the DMOs, are you able to appoint DMOs, or is it the head office that is doing that? I think it's the head office, according to the way I see it, because most offices have vacancies in the DMO offices, and offices cannot function without key personnel. So I think Matsepo, you need to raise that with the DG or Human Resources. I'm not sure we're going to raise that with us. The issue of DMOs need to be addressed, because all provinces have vacancies in those offices, and there won't be a stability. Oh, this is now gone. And one other thing is the issue of you have too many IDs in your office. Can you do something?
Yeah.
I know you said you're going to find mechanisms of distribution, but please don't use the post office. Yeah, do something about the distribution. I want the post office to be one of the mechanisms that you're going to use. Can you respond, Baba, to the questions that you posed? I'm sure may over to
Yes, one thing in terms of the security clusters in provinces, whether they do sit and what are the issues raised there, because we've seen with Northwest that they are trying to come up with mechanisms. But I don't think it's only that, but the departments themselves, intergovernmental meetings, are they being held? It's important that from now we need to check that, because we seem to be going round in circle at this level, where some issues will be pointed out to health or public works or whatever, and we're unable to bring a synergy in terms of those departments.
May I ask one thing? Okay. The issue of a document for travel purposes, I'm worried about what it is, because members have applied that we need to have passport or other form of documents for people to travel, because some of them are being abused. So if you could respond to what you want to say. Please, can you just give us 5 minutes?
Yes, thanks so much, Chair, and thanks for the honorable members. Actually, your visit, the oversight visit to Matatian, one of the reasons why we have decided to take you there, one, was to assist that particular DMO, because he's confronted with 20 offices to attend to. He's such a vibrant and energetic personality, but the kind of work that is exposed to is too much for him. So almost everything else is revolves around that area, because when you raise those issues, some of them have been raised by the stakeholder forum of Matadia that you saw to be very, very active. And following the attempts to try and look at those issues that you raised, we then approached all the security agencies in the province, despite the PCOCC that is there, despite the joints that are there. I exclusively requested them to converge and rally around the home affairs problem in that area. We've just started and they bought in. We have now in our plan divided ourselves into the social cluster and the security cluster. And in that, a number of issues came through. For example, I came to know that there are stock codes which are called IMIDIB. The Lesotho citizens are actually rearing their cattle inside Lesotho, right inside. Don't even imagine that they're closer to the border. Right inside, you see brown patches as you drive across, and you ask people, they'll tell you, no, that is manure, those are the cattle, those are the stock posts of the Lesotho people. Of course, some of them belong to us. Now, these stock posts are also used as transit posts. They come in through what is called the Pakamas. The Pakamas are these unauthorized crossings. Now, they go into the Zimidiba, then they stay there, and they wait to be provided with fraudulent IDs. A number of Lesotho citizens possess our IDs. So all these things in that meeting, I think we were to have the second one. We're exposed there. For instance, one of the stakeholder forum, I think Ms. Mfendi, who is the deputy in that forum, she's a health worker, she's a nurse. She was telling us, for the purposes of those efforts, that the Lesotho people, they come in and enjoy the health services. And many doctors don't even force them to produce IDs. As long as one requires a service, they simply serve them. And he was even asking at some point, when these people come in, they simply declare that, no, I've come through the Bakwama, I just need services. I'm expecting a child or I am sick, and people will simply provide them with service. City would say, you know, sometimes I'll think of calling you, the immigration officer, to come and arrest these people. And they do it with impunity. They don't see anything wrong. Yet our own people, when they get to this institution, they found no medicine, no treatment, because it's been finished, you know, by the people from the city. So I think we all forecast to kind of put our shoulder on the wheel as all the security cluster in order to look at those measures. Hence, we even, when we found that minister wants to go to the Eastern Cape, we decided that she must go there.
Mm.
And lately, we thought that she must come with all the security ministers as well to address those matters.
Yeah.
The traditional leaders are complaining that now there are new sites along the border. These fraudulent and crooked headmen, they simply allow people a lot plot to the Lesotho citizens without consulting with the chief. So there are a number of problems that are there. So true that I think we will definitely also go into the issue of prioritizing immigration services. We have very few inspectorates, but through that effort of the cluster, we'll be able to just say to staff, we are told there are people who need to be arrested elsewhere, without necessarily expecting that Home Affairs will be there. But of course, we shall work around. For instance, in the previous meeting, we were to go out as security and the social cluster to set up terms of reference, because we don't want anyone to abuse, you know, the efforts that that you are putting up. So, excuse me. So I think around that we definitely are focused on addressing all the problems that are inherent in the area. So I think I've addressed the issue of the GMO's vacancies that we will request Mr. Saul to take it up with head office, and because it's strenuous to us as well. I have to go out and provide support, especially to that gentleman, because he is overwhelmed by the work that is assigned with. The more part maybe it's some kind of it's a dream that we will finally mop up, take care of each and every citizen that is not yet documented. Yet we've done so much for the NPR campaign, where we thought that we've covered everyone. But later on, we were still told there are some tidbits of people there and there that require to be documented. So we hope, we do hope that we will finally mock them, clean them
up. I think yes, you need to mock them up, but the issue of LRB is still going to take time. And it's about to know that the history comes from. Most of our people still don't have IDs. And those that have IDs, there's a new trend by the department, that they are taking other people's citizens or nullifying people's citizenship because they are told that you come from Lesotho. How do you establish that they come from Lesotho when we know Lesotho has no national population register? How do you find that out? And what is happening is those are South African citizens who have permits, who have birth certificates, but you will be told that the department has told them that they are people from the school. I think you need to seriously raise the matter with the, you know, I raised the matter with the Ubabum kid, and he thought I'm paying, and I'm not paying. I think if it's not being addressed, we are going to raise it with the DJ and the minister.
But for the passport, can you assist us there with the traveling document?
Before, no, just a plan. Obviously, next time we come, we need to come with the results.
On the BRC, the BRC is a system where when they recorded the fingerprints of the people on Nani, they found that this person also has a passport of Lesotho, and he's also got an ID of South Africa. Then they blocked those people. The problem of that BRD issue is that they block and the person dies even before he's meets with Home Affairs. Then we can't give him a death certificate that's printed because the blocking was meant to say, come forth, tell us what you have with the suit passport and South African ID.
Yeah.
So we've made a proposal to say, let's not block the people, let's write to them later.
Yeah.
Because we have their addresses and tell them to come forth and explain why are they having both ID and the passport. So I think that is a problem. It's still a problem and it's a big problem. Many people die and we struggle. They want to bury. They've got insurances for people to bury. We can't give them the premises certificate, so they will take with the dead person for 3 weeks because we're struggling to get
right. You seriously need to address that. No, it's not right.
People are property. And all of us, do you know which family being belong to you? You are blocked. You have to say, obviously, they should be careful because people are very worried what is important here? One thing not to forget, and we said, and I think we need to give that mandate to the management to go and speedily address this thing. Remember we said the pronunciation was made by our previous president to say all nationalities that are workers here should acquire IDs. And they used that, but they did not do away with their citizenship. That's the problem. Now they are still continuing having the dual citizenship, and we are blaming them for that, but it's not brought to their attention to say, maybe it's time you decide which one you have. Which we said, we gave a mandate, I think last year already was, to say, go and check this thing, because we may end up shooting ourselves. Because we make people suffer and their countries will blame us to say, but this thing came up about with you. You don't allow them to have.
Yeah.
Without even going through processes in their countries.
Okay.
They just survived just like that and they got IDs. And now they've got kids. Some have kids at home. They are bringing them this side because they've been this side for long. Now I'm saying this is a process that we need to handle with care. Otherwise it may go back on our face. But it is important that we really have, because at the moment you no longer know who are those ones that were there before and who are the newly coming ones to have rectified some of the things. So that we start doing things the correct way from here going forward. Thank you. The other thing that we raised in the outreach that we've been addressing is that let us not have this approach. Yes, we want people to know that we have the security people who can enforce law in our country. But you know, the minute you bring, you go the approach that says arrest, people tend to hide and run away. Some would be arrested, but they would still come back. Now they're becoming cleverer in terms of how they manipulate or maneuver within the society. Let us have an open system that says, come forth, we want to help you and advise you accordingly to say what are the things, if you want to be a citizen of South Africa or a resident in South Africa, there are processes to follow. Come forth, let us advise you what to do so that they come to us, we register them. We really give them that advice. Those that then does not want to follow whatever, that is there, those are the ones that we can actually deal with. But at least we have records, you know where they are, you know how to, even when you communicate with them, some of them have got conflicts here. You then engage with those offices to say, we've got so many people from Lesotho, we've got this, but I know there's Lesotho Welcome, there's Lesotho Klerksdorp, there's Lesotho Johannesburg. You know, then engage with them and say, we have this particular problem, how do we then go forward addressing this particular problem in this area? I think that will help more than the arrest approach.
Okay. Yeah, so I think as provincial manager, Mr. Saul, together with the manager, you seriously need to address this. Because I have cases where people have permits, have birth certificates, but because they went to Lesotho for a year to go and study and come back, then they are told they are not South Africans. So you need to address it.
It may have escaped the head office to report what Honorable Bosma is making reference to, the immigrant survey. We have done that. We have made one pilot in Mpumalanga. As a result, that's exactly what she's making reference to. We went further to conduct it in Madadiye. We went to conduct it in Heinrich. Yes. But it has never been reported to you as I can hear now. It was for that purpose, to know the people who are not documented, to know even those who may qualify, you know, to be naturalized. Now, in this security class I'm talking about, when we were saying we are going to arrest, the reaction that we got from the traditional leaders, they were crying foul and saying, no, you're talking a different language altogether. Man. You have said these people must come forward so that you know that they are here. Some of them, they even assume that that small paper that you issued up is an ID. Now you say you're going to arrest them. No, I'm not part of that. I think we need to, there has to be an outcome of those immigrant families. Because now it's all quiet. People are remaining with expectations and nothing is happening. And it's going to defeat the very same purpose. Yes. Maybe DG, when he comes back here, he must report on that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. It's okay. Thank you. Honorable McIntosh, we're at the end of our meeting. Thank you for coming.
Everything?
Yes. Even the question. What is left is the lunch. We are all invited for lunch. And
okay.
Thank you very much for your presentation, officials, and continue doing your good work. The meeting is okay.
Thank you.